Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in The Second. We're talking with Joseph Atwill about some of his new work on Shakespeare's Secret Messiah, and of course tying this into the larger picture of what actually is going on today in the world as well. This is a very, very important topic and something we've discussed now in a couple of shows in the last few months, and there's just so many points I want to try to get into here and try to explain to people as well, of trying to make people understand and realize that what we're seeing in the world is nothing by accident. These are very, very planned events. So what I've noticed lately, Joseph, is that people can see half of the equation. For example, they can see banking conspiracies. They can see that the AIPAC run foreign policy in America is creating wars in all these places around the world that, of course, none of the Western people have democratically asked for or being part of the decision-making process here. And so we can see that there is a creation of chaos on a certain aspects in terms of the foreign policy. But this is, of course, is also something that's creating another wave of issues and problem in the West, not only depleting our coffers and handing all of our money over to these, private, weapons companies and manufacturers and just running the whole war machine as we do right now in that regard. But there's also a vengeful destruction going on of the Western societies as a second half of this agenda. And we can see this, for example, very clearly in America too, but specifically in Europe now with the increased mass immigration, multiculturalism, and the fact that the other half of this agenda is to create chaos and conflict on the street level, religious strife, oppositions on the most very fundamental culture levels. And I have a real difficulty in realizing that some people are just refuse to see the other half of the problem. I see this as the classic secret society, order out of chaos, This is how you create the conditions in the world, in the entire world, to have the reasoning for why they should bring in their, their globalist state, their surveillance, their militarization of the police. I mean, in the conditions where you have global chaos, you would have the greatest incentives ever to have a control mechanism on a global level. That's kind of part of what I'm seeing going on right now. There's much more to this, of course. We could be very much more detailed in each of these aspects that I'm trying to bring up here. But maybe we can try to put this in a historical context a little bit more. The reasoning for the vengeful, destruction of the Western world, and how this, in your view, Joseph, ties into the bigger picture of the geopolitics that we see in the world today, the foreign policy and everything. Are you tying together all these, big encompassing ideas and well, and see that there is actually a plan in destabilization here going on?
Well, it's hard not to. I get asked about this constantly, and the one part of my new work actually covers some of the further adventures of the Flavians, where we get into the Book of Revelation and then into Constantine. And I point out that Christianity being made the state religion was brought about by Constantine as part of the creation of the feudal system. Constantine gets this very positive legacy about having brought us out of paganism into Roman Catholicism, which of course is just on its face absurd, but he does get this legacy. And this is simply because people don't place the edicts that he created to implement Christianity, to start the process of having it become the state religion, with his other edicts, which set up the feudal system. The feudal system was a slave system. It lasted for 1,000 years. Constantine created the edicts that took away the rights to own land. It gave the state the right to own the children. You couldn't change vocations. You had to be the same job as your father. And anyone who tried to get away or was given harbor, they could execute everybody. So the feudal system had Christianity as its basically as its mind control component. So it was developed to give the slave some peace of mind so that he would see a kind of worker's paradise once he died. Okay? So this was I go into this in quite a bit in Shakespeare's Secret Messiahs to, you know, what was Christianity in terms of the feudal system and how mind control works. And what really got me interested in this is that I was asked questions about modern Christianity or neo-Christianity. And I was specifically asked about a book called A Course in Miracles and the foundation that this book has set up. And this guy who runs it named Ken Wapnick. And these questions came up during a seminar I was giving, and I didn't really have an understanding of it. So I went and did some reading, and I was amazed when I saw the Course in Miracles in the context of neo-Christianity, because I could see that this looks just like a modern day version of Constantine's mind control. And then I noticed something very odd, that the authors of the book belonged or had been employees of an organization the CIA had set up called MKUltra. Both Thetford and Schumann, the authors of A Course in Miracles, were employees of this CIA project, top secret, so-called. And so looking at this, trying to see, you know, well, is this related to neo-Christianity in some way? You know, I started trying to understand this organization. And at that point, it became clear to me that the organization was really just a modern version of Constantine's edicts. The counterculture that began in the 60s with the drug taking and the rock and roll, this was just a kind of worker's paradise that was being handed out by the government to distract people from the fact that they were being enslaved, you see.
Right.
And so there were a couple things that sort of gave me insights into how this was being done. One of them was the fact that the guy who so-called discovered magic mushrooms, Gordon Wasson, that he too was an employee of MKUltra, and that his whole trips, all of his trips to Mexico were in fact part of MKUltra's sub-project 58. This had been vetted by an individual named Dr. Colin Ross, who was a psychiatrist who had attempted to give therapy to individuals who had been victimized by the CIA project, where they were doing experiments on humans. And so the more I got into it, well, the worse it looked, you know. It just looked horrible. And what became clear is the same thing that the Romans did, where you have a priest, you know, who is giving the workers the idea and the image of this paradise, you know, that this was being repeated. In other words, that there were individuals who were basically what I refer to as lifetime actors, one of them being Aldous Huxley, who, when he comes on TV with Mike Wallace, he talks about how terrible it could be and will be if the government gains control of the drugs that can control people's minds. He just goes on and on about this in the interview.
Yep.
But then when you look at his work, Mocha, you see that he's engaging in these experiments. You see, he's actually in control of them. So what you have with such an individual is an actor. He's a liar. He simply lies in order to create a plausibility, a defense against ever being accused of what he actually is doing.
Right, yeah.
Just like the priest in the feudal system, you see. And so now when you look at someone like Gregory Bateson, the father of anthropology, the husband of Margaret Mead, and one of the founders, evidently, of MKUltra. And you read, you know, this guy is a Buddhist, a multiculturalist. He's at this place called Esalen, you know, promoting all of these so-called humanist ideas. And then you, with the Freedom of Information Act, look at letters that he wrote to the OSS before it becomes the CIA. And in the letters, he is stating that there are experiments that are being done and have been done by the Russians in the control of the inferior population or people by the superior population. And then he goes on to explain how you how a superior population can control. And this is in the context of slavery. This is, he's talking about Balinesian and Indonesian basically serfs and how to, the best way to affect control of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have this guy who is on one hand promoting himself to the public as a humanist, you know, all of these humanist ideas, the Esalen, love of mankind. That's how he promotes himself. But once you see what he really is, you realize that all of that is just fake, right?
Yep.
Just absolutely fake. So there's a great book called Weaponizing Anthropology by Dr. David Price, in which he shows that the letters that he obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, which has these quotations. Now, what Price couldn't do is recognize the connection between the technique that had been developed through these experiments in terms of how to control the inferior people and the counterculture. Because, in fact, once you just lay out the trajectory of Bateson's science in his life, you can see that he plugs completely into the Grateful Dead and to, you know, these band members who are members of the Bohemian Grove of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
And that it all starts to make perfect sense, that what you've got is people lying about their identities for the purpose of creating confusion and the inability to know that an attack, an assault is going on. It's all being done under this benign auspice, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right?
Yep.
What could be better? But
peace and love, baby. Yep.
Peace and love. But you see, now if you look at Huxley's letters, where he talks about the fact that the oligarchs need to promote sexual freedom to a great degree, to the same degree as the intensity of the slavery, right?
Yeah.
Then suddenly the sexual revolution that he's bringing about doesn't look very benign, does it?
Yeah.
You see? So, well, people say, well, that's grim. And the idea that our government could engage in stuff seems, you know, terrifying and also impossible. But here's the evidence, and it's very clear. But what do we do about it? How do we know what's going on? And so I would just say, from the experience I've had, I would give the same advice today to people that I would have given to serfs in the feudal system, which was you need to learn the identity, the family and ethnic identity of the people who have the power. Because if you find that all these priests and politicians and military leaders are just one big family, then you will recognize immediately that this isn't a religious world that you're in. It's a slave system. See, it would be completely transparent. Now, how would they know? They couldn't do any tests. But you see, we can. We have the power. And what I say to people today is that you think democracy exists. Well, you haven't taken the first step, which is, who the hell are the people we're voting for?
Yeah.
Who are they?
Of course.
Where do they come from? What are their family backgrounds? What is their ethnicity? We know what they claim, but they're politicians. They like Gregory Bateson and Aldous Huxley and Constantine. They just lie their head off systematically. It isn't enough to know what they tell us. They're going to create plausible deniability at every turn. They do this in a professional manner. This is what they do. So how do we know the truth? Well, we have to bet them with DNA. That's how we vet them, you know. And what I'm wondering is, okay, you have these world rulers and these great, enormous political and, you know, events, the historical events. Well, all of this comes from this lever that political power creates. Because really, it's just a few thousand people at the most that are really involved in all this stuff, right?
Right.
I mean, how many... Yeah. Really involved people or even in, for example, like the Ukrainian situation.
Sure, sure.
A couple hundred people suddenly decided, nah, we don't want to fight here. Let's just work it out. It would be done. So who are these individuals? Now, we are given this illusion, in my opinion, of democracy, right? We are given that. We supposedly can vote, but in order to have the vote mean anything, we have to be absolutely certain that there isn't a relationship that we are not being told about between the different people we get to choose from. If they're part of some secret society or some crypto ethnicity or just have some other genetic connection, right off the bat, we've got no democracy. We're just being fooled. Now, beyond this, we need to do other kinds of vetting. This would be the first simple step, a step that could easily be done. 23andMe, the DNA testing company, can do this for $80, right? A database of oligarchs, which I would recommend be done immediately. I mean, Bill Gates has the seed bank. I would like to have the oligarch database bank.
That's funny. Yeah, every exactly.
Dictator and insane politician, or even someone who through misunderstanding, supposedly, led us into war, or that should all be in a DNA data bank so that the citizens can be absolutely certain that at least if we're going to go down again, we're going to be led by a new group. It isn't going to be the repetition of World War I, World War II, all this other stuff. Because I am very suspicious, Henrik. I'm sure you can tell it in my voice.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I'm very suspicious about this. I would like to know what are the family relationships among this veneer, this tiny veneer of the human population that leads us into these holocausts. Who are they? And I would like to have that, and it could be easily done. You could get the family members of Churchill and Roosevelt and Hitler, Mussolini, you know, all of these people. There's ways to do this. You can tell who's related to who now. And then when you have modern people just come out of nowhere, these men on horseback that show up to lead us to a better world like Obama, you know, well, who the hell is the guy?
Yeah.
What are his mother's family's, who are they related to? Because we have to be certain that we're not just choosing the same old oligarchic families time and time again because they have a history of creating genocide. And so now, you know, just to get to your question about, well, what the hell's going on in Europe? Why don't the economic, military, and sperm count crises ever get better? I mean, nothing ever gets better. It's just this straight shoot into depopulation, right? I mean, it's easy to imagine in 100 years there are no Europeans.
Yeah.
So, well, what the hell's going on? My first question is, who are the leaders? Because you see, you pointed out in your the preamble to this that you said, you know, we don't, if the vote was taken, should we invade Iraq? You couldn't get 10% of the American population to go along with this.
Even if that many, yeah.
Afghanistan, I mean, most people, they would just laugh at this. They would just think this is preposterous. Afghanistan, you know?
Yeah.
500,000 casualties, Afghanistan. This is just nuts. What is this? What is the back of all this? So to try to make this better, we need better politicians. That tiny veneer of political power has to be claimed as something for that is represented by the people. So the first step would be the DNA, the oligarch DNA database. And then the second step is basically the one that you are engaged in so effectively, is just to make people aware of this problem. it's not going to be discussed in mainstream media. So, we were talking before we began the interview, and you were saying there are actually some hopeful signs.
Yeah, I think there are. Yeah.
So that's actually, I'd ask you, if you don't mind turning tables here, can you describe some of them and maybe mention to your listeners how these hopeful signs can be promoted?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think that the most important thing to keep in mind here is that the system in itself, the established order, does itself a disservice by continuing the path they're on, because the people on the street level, if you will, the people who are actually out there in society and living and engaging. And again, I'm specifically speaking about, I guess, Europe now, and also, you know, Sweden in particular. But nonetheless, I think this, at least in Europe, can be applicable. And I mean, I'm in contact with so many Americans as well. And we all kind of have the same system going on now in the Western world. It's being run above our heads. We don't have any part in the process. The media is controlled, you know. It's all very much regulated. In Europe, for example, many European countries, we have state-subsidized media, so we have a very uniformitarian kind of ideology being espouted from the central command, basically. But in that process alone, people see that what they're being told in the media completely fails with what they're experiencing on the street level of things. So, ergo, you're going to have a rising up of an independent, you know, internet-based media that have definitely occurred in Sweden and does so in many other countries as well. I mean, look at the European elections that we had now. The absolutely wonderful fact that Europeans said, we've had enough of what we're experiencing in these countries. They're anti-European Union, but they're not anti-European. They're, you know, nationalists and nothing in within, for example, what the Swedish Democrats have been talking about has been in any regard considered to be violent or anything like that. This has been about trying to regain control of the country, the runaway open borders, mass immigration. Again, nothing of this is democratically being elected, any of these processes. Ergo, you're going to have a lot of people speaking up about this. And it's been very interesting to see how the media have been, bar none, there's no outlet that hasn't, you know, basically said that these are neo-Nazis coming to power in Europe. And these are complete extremist racists that are, I mean, come on, let it go. It's like, these are people, regular people, they're voting, they're using the democratic process to get their message across. And I mean, at least in Europe, right, we've actually had some veneer of, quote, diversity, unquote, when it comes to the parties that we can elect. And I think that in this case, we've had the elections for the European Parliament, right? So we had in France with the National Front, we've had UKIP in England, we've had in Denmark, I forget what the name was there, you've had the Swedish Democrat in Sweden. They've all advanced political parties in Holland, etc. And sure, they have their issues, they have their problems, they have their small little quirks, and some of them are going to be Zionists, you know, makeshift, and some of them are just strictly going to be anti, you know, immigration or anti-Muslim. Some of them might be the other way, you know, whatever. But I guess what I'm getting at is that there's a tendency here towards something going on, at least in Europe, because the conditions have now gone so bad and so, you know, off that edge that people don't even recognize their own country anymore. And how can people not realize what actually is going on and see this and realize that this is a perfectly normal reaction to something? They're trying to achieve something. And again, it doesn't mean that the process is perfect or, you know, all the plans is laid down of what's going to be achieved or whatnot. But I mean, if people are really true and honest about this, just look at what the media, how they treated this particular issue and the way that they demonized every single party that got these kinds of votes from the more pro-nationalist, political parties. And you realize what the agenda is, because it's only in that alternative press that I talked about before that you can have some kind of balanced view. And the people say, all right, this is interesting. It's like in some countries, it's up towards, 25% of the votes. In some, it's about 10% of the votes. But it's an initial step towards something, and it's something that I'm very encouraged by. And again, it doesn't mean that there is a backing of violence against anybody else. It doesn't mean that these are neo-Nazis that want to, you know, go out and kill 6 million Jews. You know, it's like these are over-the-top exaggerations made in an attempt to try to discredit and shut down the debate on these issues, because I think they, frankly, are really scared about what actually is going on in Europe and the awakening, if you will, of some kind of national sentiment. So I'm really positive about that, and a lot of the sites out there now, they're independent, they're beginning to offer some kind of balanced view to the, you know, unbelievably unbalanced cultural Marxist outlets out there in the West right now that are completely just hammering the agenda of the globalist elite. So I'm encouraged, Joseph, very encouraged, actually.
Good. Well, I'm encouraged when I hear you talk. I'm discouraged when I read the newspapers, but...
we all are. That's what they want us to be, right? You know.
Yeah, and so yeah, they break us down with the pseudo news that they give us. And I mean, if you have the position that they know what they're doing in terms of mind control, you can see that they're very effective in terms of intimidation and the tools that they use to make people ashamed of supporting people who could be, you know, tainted with these negative things that they can, you know, claim that they are. But, you know, the thing that I would hope happens is that there be exposure of their techniques. You know, their mind control will work until it's exposed. Once it's been shown and people understand it, then, you know, you just won't have people watching Fox News or listening to BBC. I mean, that will all simply disappear because they will recognize it is what it is.
You
just know that this is bad for you and you shouldn't go to movies.
And the numbers are dropping, I think. Look at the quality as well. I mean,
and that is fantastic. The fact that people are disengaging from this media because it is designed to break down and to destroy. I mean, if you look in the United States, this doesn't occur, at least I don't know, maybe it is, but in the United States, there are probably 30 shows on surviving in a post-technology world. You've got Survivor Man, Dual Survivor, Naked Survivor, where they have no clothes on.
I saw some of that. That was ridiculous.
But you see, there's a point to all this. This is, of course, preparing people. It's putting the ideas into their mind about a society without electricity.
Right, yeah.
You know, so you can see that when they pull the plug, they will have already normalized the condition in the population. So all of these survivalist shows, you know, should be turned off. You don't want to expose your children to the idea that primitive culture is a good idea.
It's like a symbolic thing, like, okay, the quote, civilized, unquote, world is over. Even the electricity that you created is going to be gone, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, you know, you have then when you turn the channel, you get these zombie apocalypse shows where you're in a post-technology world where everyone is cannibalizing one another. And so, you know, this stuff shouldn't be watched. It should be understood. I'm, you know, an aspiring symbologist. And so in the this website that I'm going to be presenting called Inside Out Asylum, I'm going to try to do just my interpretation of, you know, the neo-feudalist techniques, right, that are going on. I'm in a position, I think, where I can at least have an informed understanding because I have a background in the first version, the version of Christianity that was used in the feudal system. And I think that most of these techniques are just repeating themselves. Christianity was really a way of bringing about a kind of archaic revival. The European peasant was far less sophisticated in the year 500 than in the year 100 BC, where Rome was basically on the cusp of the Industrial Revolution.
Right, yeah.
And large literacy and mathematical skills. All of this got turned around by Christianity. And so...
Isn't that interesting, though? That's a very important point. I'm glad you mentioned that we were actually at a certain point of development. We were ahead. I mean, think about it. Ancient Greece, even that, mathematics
Rome,
and all that.
Rome even was using, the beginning of computers. They had algorithmic machines that were starting to do computations automatically. Basically, even electricity they were right there. They could have been no more than 200 years from the Industrial Revolution. But this didn't please the oligarchs. How is that any fun for them? You know, they want power, and power the dumber the population, the better. And so,
yes,
what Bateson discovered, what Russian anthropologists discovered, and Bateson cited in the letter that David Price has in Weaponizing Anthropology, was that the best way to gain control over the inferior people, and this is his expression, inferior people, right? He uses this term, is to create a archaic revival where their primitive traits, right, become seen as a positive thing. So that when you have the Sunset Strip explode in 1965, right, and you have all of this strange music and drug taking going on, if you look at the musicians that are coming out of nowhere to produce the music, they all look like they're members of the Lewis and Clark expedition, right? You see pictures of David Crosby with the hair and the buckskin fringe and cowboy hats and boots, and they are literally promoting, whether or not it's intentional, I think it was. They're promoting this archaic revival that you would want to return to the land and to return to a more primitive state. So now we have our modern world, and we have 20 shows that are promoting the value of a post-electricity world, right?
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's the same thing. It is a way of breaking down the aspirations and what you have in your mind, because the citizens should not be happy with the state that we have. We're heading toward a post-technology world. Europe is really in danger of it. The financing is so catastrophic, in my opinion, that we are really on the cusp of losing large fractions of what civilization is developed from.
Wow.
You see?
Yeah.
So this isn't a hypothetical. I mean, this is the problem that we're facing. And so when you see these techniques that are appearing in the media that are normalizing these things, then the question is, well, shouldn't the population turn this off and develop some energy to reverse the trend, to
right.
preserve civilization, to preserve their culture?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But you, to get there, I think... it's a tricky path. You've got to get rid of the effects of the media, because when you look at this CIA project MKUltra, and I've gone through some of the paperwork on it, the level of sophistication is so high that they certainly had a good idea about how to create culture. I mean, imagine if the entire counterculture, right, is essentially their concept. If this is true, then that's reflective of a very high level of sophistication.
Certainly. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you see these shows, and in the United States, we're just bombarded. You turn on the TV and there's the naked survivor, eating beetles and, I mean, it's
kind of this the noble savage idea a little bit. It's like a war on civilization and development, a move towards tribalism kind of thing, right?
Yeah. So the thing is, well, that's not what we want people to aspire to. That's not a mindset that is useful for the preservation of civilization, right?
Right.
We should be upset that electricity is basically being threatened, and upset that with all of the technical achievements that mankind has made since World War II, or even from the beginning of the 20th century, where is the payoff for the citizen? I mean, here we are, impoverished, oppressed by our political class. We haven't benefited at all. I mean, my God, in the United States, they can't even find jobs.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So there is no benefit. We need to have a different quality of citizen. Angrier, more focused, more skeptical, and more able to vet real leaders. Right now, my fear is we're not vetting leaders. If you look at the French Revolution, a lot of good ideas, but it ends up with Napoleon. Of course, then you look at all of these secret societies that his family is involved with, and you go, well, dude, that doesn't look very democratic, And yet there he is, you know, after all of this struggle and all of this bloodshed, suddenly you end up with Napoleon. And of course, he wants to invade Russia. Well, that's a great idea. Let's just invade Russia, you know? So the problem there was that the quality of leaders wasn't understood by the citizens. We didn't know what to look for. We ended up with Napoleon. I don't want us to end up with Napoleon again. And so, you know, we really have to right now, as there is still civilization, as we still can have the internet, we've got to develop these techniques where we have more effective citizenship.
Definitely. Let me add something to that. And I think I'm noticing where you're going with it as well. And I think it's a very important point. I want to try to stress that a little bit more. If the conditions get so bad, as they already are, but they can certainly get worse, there's always room for that, it seems like. Let's say in Europe, we can look at that first. But this could be true in America too, I guess. At some point along the road there, when conditions become so bad, people, of course, they scramble for anything that can kind of save the situation, right? And it's in that moment, which is both a tremendous opportunity to actually turn things around, but also tremendous danger of getting one of these complete, you know, dedicated to the ideology, psychopathic people that are going to lead us down even a worse trail than we're on right now, right? There's a danger in that we could be yet another major war, for example, or another, as you talked about before, just a major depopulation, either due to loss of technology and infrastructure or anything else, another starvation like we saw in the Ukraine, etc. All of these things are possible due to the fact that people also sit around. They wait for someone else to lead. They're not brave anymore. They hunker down in fear to make decisions or stand up for themselves or their family. These are ultimately values of the people that are alive today. That's how I see it. Way too many passive people that are just kind of waiting for someone else to do it, right? We don't have, I mean, what kind of quality do we have today of human beings alive, if you see what I'm getting at?
Well, exactly. And the problem is, of course, this was by design. In other words, If my analysis of the counterculture is correct, we got here through design. We are now beaten down. We watch American Idol for an hour and then turn on Naked Survivor and don't complain about anything.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So and don't have the intellectual capacity to even know what is going on. Well, if you think about it in this regard, you had in the Middle Ages, the oligarchs would look out upon the slaves and see, you know, a very beneficial sight because the slave would be producing product and wealth. But today, the oligarch, as he drives around the plantation, it must be irritating because the slaves aren't producing anything. You know, robots can do everything. And the thought must occur that, you know, why am I wasting my money on these useless people?
Right.
So I would think that the fact that we have been brought to this place is simply the precursor to the depopulation process. Now, they can do it, you know, benignly with slow motion birth control and whatnot, but I think that would probably not be in keeping with their style historically. You know, once the crisis occurs, and of course they can plan these things to the nth degree, they can break off the electricity, the grid, military control will be everywhere. And then, of course, who can produce their own food at this point?
Right. Yeah.
So you're just literally months away from a different level of population, right?
Yeah.
So the citizen has this moment, you know. And I hope that, Henrik, I mean this absolutely sincerely, I hope people are paying attention.
Yeah, you know? I do too.
I hope they're listening.
Yeah.
Because this is the time that we have to stop this. And where we're headed, in my mind, is clear at this point. I don't think we are in history unfolding around us and everything always ends up bad by accident. You know,
right, yeah.
What I see is a plan and execution. And so and if you want to stay alive, then You will need to develop a higher level of citizenry, more alert. And the first step, of course, is to find out how to organize. And we, before we began the interview, you and I were discussing, you know, how to do this. I would hope that to start with, people will attend your Red Ice Radio faithfully, because this will be a place where you can start to have principles develop you can organize around. I mean, you know, everyone is in isolation. Divide and conquer in our society has been taken to almost an absurd level, where you see people walking around with their devices and they don't even notice humans around them.
That's right.
You know, they're just they're just totally lost, you know, as far as human connection. So how do you gain political power, right? Well, I mean, first you've got to mobilize social media. You have to use this mind control device against the oligarchs by using it to develop organizational connection. And then you have to look in your own life for power. You need to go out and find a friend, you know, someone you can talk to about these ideas. And then the two of you maybe find another one. And now there's three of you. You have the ability to actually link up to already existing groups to try to influence them, these groups. Because as I walk around the world, I live in California. I notice that people are getting nervous. I can see concern that the stories that were being told about the economic recovery and are starting to wear a little thin. The excuses as to why the wars can never stop, they seem to be wearing a little thin too. People are starting to wonder what our government is. And so this is the time that we have to organize ourselves. And, you know, you want to know how to do it. Well, one place to go is Red Ice Radio. And if you want to listen into Inside Out Asylum, I'll be trying to give comments on news events on a daily fashion. And what I am hoping to do is to actually link up with Henrik and others of this concern to create a kind of 24/7 news network that would always have the availability of there being some feedback that is not mainstream media in terms of what is going on. You know, I sort of am like one of the premier conspiracy theorists on the planet, I think, at this point, because, you know, I now with two books, both, you know, involved in this. Maybe, you know, many will say, you know, we cannot take this individual seriously, but I'll tell you, you don't need to have all of these concerns, the things that Henrik and I have just been discussing, believed in, to recognize that something's wrong, that a better form of citizenry is needed now, more alert, and to start the process.
Yeah.
Look, the Democratic and the Republican Party, they are just a complete failure. They do not produce anything that is remotely similar to democracy. The mainstream media, I mean, well, that's just a joke at this point. So look, you have to come somewhere to get information. Red Ice Radio is a good place to start.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I think, I mean, it's encouraging, though, that many of these major institutions and the overall is kind of falling apart. It's very interesting to see and the developments here, I think, in the future years here as well, Joseph. And I think we're going to see a completely some brand new concepts popping up, actually using, it might sound weird, but I've been thinking about this a little bit. And I mean, we might even see, of course, the movements of people in itself, meaning groupings into areas and territory where people who want to, you know, who share opinions and ideas are basically going to be and reside in and have a local economy or what have you. I mean, there are certain of these examples already, both in America and Europe, but this even taking on a bigger role because, I mean, you said it yourself, where's the brotherhood? Where's the support and working together? You know, because there are ideas out there and they just, I mean, people might even at some point use the web, just as we saw the emergence of a digital currency. Why can there not be, it might sound kind of absurd, but why not see a virtual nation being created where people, literally, they might not be in the same location yet, but it could be a dedication to, you know, an idea or a concept of how to live, what have you, of just knowing that you have a network of like-minded people out there who you can, you know, talk with and get together with. And I mean, I think we're going to see stuff like this popping up in the future. I mean, future movements of people, because things are getting so broken up, at least in the Western world now, broken up in terms of demographics and even ethnicity and stuff like that. And I think that this is going to spawn some really weird but interesting things, actually, when it comes to, you know, territory and stuff like that. So I'm not, you know, hopeless in terms of that regard. I just hope that it can take place in a way which is beneficial, you know, without us going through just some of the aspects that you described, for example, because that would be a horrible scenario to see that happening. But I think that, I mean, when people are cornered, when people are challenged in the most, you know, difficult way, that's also actually when we see people really shining through and actually trying to achieve something greater. And they, because of survival, basically, they have to snap into a different mode. And that's your reasoning and your incentive to attain the higher awareness of yourself and your world right there. And so I think we're going to see some pretty interesting things occurring in the future years here, Joseph, and kind of reactions to the chaos and the mayhem and the just complete failure of government and media and everything else. I'm still positive, actually.
You're just a sunny guy, Henrik. you know, I agree with you, and I would even go to as just to give an example. It's a shame that the Occupy movement didn't attempt to simply create a virtual political party, because at that time there were dozens of these energies, these groups that had been established through all the cities in the United States and in some cases in Europe. So there should have been the power of organization and a bureaucracy established to make sure that the organization continued to exist, had goals, had structure. We need to have political change, we need to have organized numbers. So the internet is an absolutely perfect way to develop this kind of a movement. And this is one of the hopes I have, is that hopefully before things get too bad, that the energy you described that comes to people when they are feeling as though they're truly being threatened arise in people's souls and hearts, that they will know that there is a place to go with it.
Yeah.
And how to, and that people who have thought about the structure will have already created it. We don't want to wait for a worldwide plague or nuclear wars or whatever event that could be used by the oligarchs to end civilization occurs. We really would like to strike ahead of that and develop democratic energy and connections across nations, across ethnicities, and have it just be a thing that can lead to political power eventually, because it won't take much, you know, with the two-party systems, and some nations have three-party systems. But, you know, if we can have 10-15% of the people that are influenced by the political positions that a virtual political party is taking, and it is illustrating the news and what these things mean and who's in back of it, and having some power, then you can start to affect elections, you know?
Yeah.
And if we can do that, then we actually have a chance. We have a chance. So that that is hopefully our future. And I think everyone who hears us having this conversation and who thinks that there's any meaningful reality being discussed, I mean, this is a call to arms. Get off your butt.
Yeah.
Get it done. Start organizing. You've got to use the internet while it's available to create political connection. You know, when you look at Bitcoin, I mean, this is, you know, a very clever idea. Lots of people are participating in it. Well, why does something like Bitcoin have so much computer energy given to it when a political party that could stand against the oligarchs gets almost none, you know?
Right.
So, so let's have those people who are sophisticated in the internet, people who are sophisticated in organizing within the internet. These are the people who need to bring their skills forward. You should be contacting Henrik immediately, you know, and saying, what do I do? How do I use these skills? Yeah. Get the skills into motion. Start to organize. The Occupy movement is still in kind of a nascent form and therefore can still be rekindled. It just needs to be brought back as a part of this internet political nation that can have some political power.
I mean, democracy overall, too, is like it is an outdated giant. I think the reasoning there why so much... Well, again, then it depends on how you view it, because at least in Europe, there were, you know, in the European elections, we saw a different result. We saw a different drive towards something else, which is really encouraging. And then at the same time, perhaps even more so in the polarized yet very much the same, you know, Republican Democratic system. There's not really much difference between the parties at all. It's the same, you know, war mechanism run by the same movements, basically. But the failure of democracy in that regard, the failure of the political process. But it's almost like if there is something that can take hold underneath that, where people still organize and manage to make decisions and live together in a certain way, it would basically become like an outdated giant that basically can't hold any, you know, real power over people, because that's, at the end of the day, that's where it lies as well, right? If you have enough people doing something, it doesn't matter what kind of system you have above that. It needs to just basically fall on its own and die, and then there needs to be something in place there where people still live, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in total agreement. The problem is, of course, that, you know, the oligarchs realize that to have any political control, have any real power, you have to control both sides of the dialectic. So, you know, when people voted for Obama, they thought that they were being given a choice that was the opposite of George Bush.
Oh, my God. Right. I can't
this
believe
was the
that,
idea, you know? Right? And now, when he invaded Afghanistan, people were sort of caught off guard.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, well, wait a second. How I thought we voted for, you know, the non-George Bush. But this is just an example of their sophistication. They know the appetites of the population, and they know they since they control both parties, they can just bring forward any kind of a candidate they want. The idea that it would just die of its own accord, I would say it's already dead. It's the problem is that it's just a veneer like Christianity was in the feudal system. And, you know, they had Christianity and the workers' paradise, and we have, you know, American Idol and the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yeah.
But it's all just an illusion. It's all just manufactured, and people just participate in it because they don't know what's really in back of it. The ones that recognize it as false need to actually, you know, consider how to have political power, what political power means. These aren't things that are going to be resolved with two people having a chat. It's what I know needs to happen is concerned citizens need to organize. Concerned citizens need to start using the power of social media to create an internet political party. The party has to have goals which are comprehensible and doable. You know, so not being genocided, I think, would be a good plank to run on.
So exactly.
Things like that you can get people to, you know, I mean, restoration of the Constitution in the United States. I mean, the Constitution is just being stripped day by day. Every day new imperial powers, new, restrictions on the Constitution appear. So these are things I think the public are getting back of. And if the organization is fueled by the energy of desperation, right, the one that you talked about, that energy, then genius will appear and you will have ways of using it that you and I cannot even imagine.
Exactly.
Start to appear. And so really what we want to do is create a platform that can easily grow, that has values that are not, you cannot co-opt them easily, and then open it up to the genius of the desperate public to how do we make it better? How in the world can we, get control over the production of credit, for example, where instead of a few families that own the Federal Reserve being able to make money out of thin air and then charge whatever they want for it, that the people have control over making money out of thin air, and the interest therefore would go back to the people who create it. You know,
right,
the nation
exactly.
itself. And little ideas like this that would do well in terms of improving our democracy. So, the emergency is there, and the tool to make progress against it is there, and let's stop talking about it and get some of this stuff done.
And also, I want to add a couple of things there as well. I mean, as you mentioned before, technology in itself is a fantastic tool, and even like I'm just trying to drop kind of that idea a little bit for people as well, that there might be things happening in the next few years where some solutions, which maybe before would take a lot of effort and time and difficulty, see things become more and more available. It's in that regard, it's being individualized and a single person. I mean, just look at, for example, how digital cameras has changed the film production and video production and things like that, right? But think about it from 3D printing and the way you can do certain things now in terms of valuable materials and things like that can be compounded and put together. There is the development of robotics, etc. There's tons of these things, so I think it's not only about, in that regard, developing the political kind of framework. It's I think it's even more so actually about the controlling or influencing the dialogue, spreading the memes. It is a kind of a sense you need to take over the cultural debate, and in that regard it is a kind of rebellion against what we have now, of course, but this means getting into art, into film, music, radio, printing press, what have you, to try to counteract the counter revolution. This is how it unfolds. People you realize that you had a takeover, as you kind of explained before, in the 60s of a certain way that they turned Western society against itself, right? It became a corrosive force and became about criticizing it and breaking it down and making everything it can to make it, painted in the worst light possible, So it's about, to a certain extent, using the same methodology, but making it in a positive sense, right? Controlling that dialogue, spreading those memes. I think that's a very important aspect. And because, I mean, look at how much entertainment influences people, unfortunately. And again, who is controlling the dialogue there? Who's dictating what kind of ideas are spreading through, most of that filth, in the movie theaters today and everything else? Because it's like, it's really devalued, and the fact is that this is an area where I think that there is tremendous potential, because people are hungry for something else. If you look at Hollywood, what they produced in the last, 10, 15 years, it's gone downhill incredibly fast. And I think it's just a matter of time before a lot of people just basically walk away from it. And I think a lot of people already has done that. So there will be a void there to fill with good, movie production, things that have good values and spread good things, So there's a lot to do here. That's my point. A lot to do,
Sure. I would just say, in terms of Hollywood and the media, what I'm not seeing is the declarative sentence that this is designed to damage us. I think that is a really useful idea. When you turn on the TV and there's Miley Cyrus, right, twerk dancing, then you would have automatically, or at least someone would bring up the concept that this is done deliberately.
Yeah,
this isn't some accident. You didn't have someone become a role model for preteen young women, right? With Hannah Montana, whatever she was, but she had this stature as the role model, and in totally wholesome way, and then become virtually like the Whore of Babylon overnight. This should be considered as deliberate, that this was done, that her stature as a role model was created for the purpose of her having the power to break the minds down of the young women who are following her.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So where is that discussion that it was deliberate? Where is the analysis of the individuals who were involved in the creation of Hannah Montana and then in the creation of the twerk dancing iteration we have today? So that should be part of the media's discussion of our culture, that it that this could be designed, right? Consciously designed to damage us. So that's the kind of thing that will hopefully, you know, be part of this project that that we're all on, you know, to try to change our culture through producing a better media. Obviously, Red Ice is, you know, a great step, and we can use it as sort of the, you know, a platform to start moving forward from. We want to start making it difficult for the media to design.
Exactly.
To break us down.
Yeah.
That we want to make part of the conversation be the analysis of what the media is producing from the perspective of deliberate destruction of our psychology.
Yes.
Yeah. That,
exactly.
That's what we want to start getting into that, because if we do that, if nothing else, it'll turn off the crap, you know?
Exactly.
If people are being accused, and if you can get people who have some evidence of this to come forward and start showing the public that this is what they're being damaged with, then it'll be a lot tougher, won't it, for these producers and the people who are designing our culture to lead us off a cliff.
Well, exactly. We need more people doing this, doing the analysis of the propaganda, the day-by-day breakdown from the news segments to the entertainment and the entrainment of the entertainment, countering the garbage, pointing it out, analyzing it, putting it in context and showing, you know, comparatively and showing how it's being used again and again. I mean, all these things are absolutely vital to get people to wake up. And in some cases, you have a certain crowd doing this, but usually then it's about, you know, kind of finding the 3 seconds that the pyramid in eye was used behind the character. And then they're actually missing that the most, you know, in your face propaganda is right there in the storyline and the dialogue, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing is they can find, you know, like Freemason symbols in oddball places. And then they miss the fact that, you know, that Miley Cyrus is a cultural atomic bomb.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? So this is and they don't see the trajectory, you know, this of course is because it's so incremental. You know, in a paper I wrote called Manufacturing the Deadhead, we focused a bit on Edward Bernays. You know, in the 1912, he was involved in what we believe was the beginning of the normalization of the destruction of culture. And we list the different things that he was involved in. You know, he was Sigmund Freud's nephew, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's only when you look at what he did in the 19 teens and then go forward to the Sunset Strip in the late 1960s that you can see the arc. You can see the entire arc of how culture was transformed for the worse. So the oligarchs think long-term and incremental. You can't always notice the direction that they're taking you in. So this is why there has to be a media that has stature in opposition to them, that can show this arc, that can go back into history, that can give the victim, and that's what we are, of the current assault, the perspective of the weapon. So they know that they've been hit with this thing, and they can turn Miley off, and they can turn off Naked Survivor. You don't need to watch that crap. Don't watch any films that are apocalyptic zombie films.
If it's not for the analysis and breakdown of it.
Yeah, exactly. Watch it to study it. Study the media,
And
then explain that to people that you have influence with.
Exactly.
But for God's sakes, do not sit there passively and let that stuff get into your head. It is poison.
It is. And it gets in there too. People who don't think about it, I can't tell you how many times I've shown people who are, you know, allegedly they're awake and they're into conspiracy and stuff like that, and they miss the most obvious stuff in the mainstream media or in one of the latest movies or something like that. So that's a really valuable point, and just by showing that, by that virtue of pointing all those things out, I think more and more people will consequently, they will get aboard and see that, all right, someone is actually actively trying to change my psychology. They're trying to turn me into something which I am not, you know, and that's a problem.
I mean, there should be a guide to the modern family, where parents of children are given a position paper that they can use to protect the minds of their children. And they should also be exposed to the assault that are environmental upon us in the food,
yeah,
in the drugs, in the vaccines. I mean, in other words, there should be a kind of anti-genocide paper that basically or a website that we know what the mainstream media will give us. We know that it isn't just vomit, but rather it's a weapon. So since we don't want to be attacked constantly, we want to actually flourish as a family, there has to be some alternative. And that's really what I hope the alternative media can become. It becomes where people will go to become healthy and strong.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that, a lot of that is going on. A lot of the things we are talking about here, of course, there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of websites that are detailed. And yet there might be, in a certain extent, isolated a little bit here and there in some of the groupings, etc. But again, we have to be the node point in our own network of understanding, and we have to find these websites and you know, better and more elaborate one will come along. But absolutely, you're right. I mean, the health issue alone, in terms of how we're being transformed with, you know, from chemicals to poisons to vaccines to, you know, pesticides and everything else, it's a vital point in this picture of realizing that all of this leads to the consequent dumbing down and making us unhealthy and incapable of thinking and everything else. So it's all very much connected, you know?
Exactly. And so we need to have a place where families can go to have medicine explained from the position of no more weapons that we aren't aware of being directed at us, food, media. There needs to be experts brought to bear. There needs to be doctors, anthropologists, real psychiatrists, if there are any. I'm not sure about that. But but there should be people who, well, actually, no, I do know one, Colin Ross, as a matter of fact.
Right, yeah, correct. Exactly.
Okay, so that as these weapons are brought to bear against culture, there is a place that can be gone to that you can get the antidote. You can get a description of how it's damaging you. There's an expert, someone that you can actually trust, whose research and whose reasoning is open for public dissemination, not some secret pharmacologics industry that has agents and lobbyists within our government, or but where the public can trust.
Yeah.
So that's really the direction that we want to head in. And then the last, another component is we need to improve our thinking. We've obviously been, we're dumbed down by watching American Idol and Naked Survivor and then 2 hours of Miley Cyrus. But how do we improve our minds? Well, we need to think more clearly. And so we need to, understand the logical fallacies. We need to use reason in the formal sense. And by that, I simply mean, in the sense of logic, to understand when we are the victims of things which are easily exposed as irrational by the a simple application of some principles of reason, that this is just part of the training, that people know that they are under attack, they know they haven't been trained to think well in their schools, and so there is a place they can go to where they can start to make improvement in these areas.
Well, exactly. I want to mention one more thing here as well. And it's related to this. Some people might actually say, I've heard this before as well. I don't watch mainstream media anyway, so it doesn't concern me or whatnot. But there today as well, there's a lot of pseudo mainstream media or sure, more advanced alternative media, I guess, as they would call themselves, that actually reiterate a lot of the same points that the mainstream media is. But it comes in a different format. It feels like it's more, a smaller setting. Therefore, I mean, there's been studies on this. People, the way that they trust something, if it gets too big in corporate, people are like, they filter it away in a certain capacity, at least those who are kind of more countercultural and seeking answers and whatnot. So they might trust that source that looks more to be a smaller outlet dedicated to, truth and analysis. But it turns out, as we know, with the rise of the web and everything else, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of just noise out there as well, and you get a lot of the same points filtered through. So ultimately, And I'm not specifically saying, oh, avoid this outlet or avoid this one here. I'm not here to tell you anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, think and pull it together yourself and realize that, you know, if you begin to watching the mainstream as an analysis, then you can actually realize and see how much of it also is reiterated in the alternative. And then you can ask yourself and question, you know, why is this? Why is this coming just back the same messages again and question it in that perspective? So always kind of keep that in mind and realize as well that there are a lot of ideas out there in terms of how to control the debate, how to influence people, how to push them in a certain direction politically. And there are people, yes, there are people who are, you know, paid in that regard to actually lead people down, like Pied Pipers. My favorite right now is someone like Russell Brand, for example. You know, these are mainstream people who are, you know, getting involved in politics and leading people, you know, down like Pied Piper. So beware and have your awareness there and realize what these people are trying to lead you, rather, you know?
Of course. I mean, I think that there's really virtually enough available in terms of the CIA's production of the counterculture that this can be a kind of template for people to apply to the modern situation. I mean, you know, there are a number of individuals that have been covering this story, and it's I think fairly clear that there's simply too many connections into the beginning of the counterculture were from the military intelligence community to be circumstantial.
Yeah.
So Dave McGowan has written a book about the connections of the Laurel Canyon scene. There have been a tremendous amount of documentation on the San Francisco, the Grateful Dead specifically. And
that's right.
And so you get that, and then people look at this and they, you know, because they like the music or they like taking drugs, they don't ever want to admit that they were fooled. So someone like that, there's nothing one can do with them. It's just, I think that more open-minded people will look at, you know, well, how is it possible that all of these individuals had these connections into MKUltra and the military intelligence? I mean, Ken Kesey was, you know, an MKUltra employee. Robert Hunter, the lyricist of the Grateful Dead. Osley, the LSD guy, lived for 2 years at St. Elizabeth Hospital, where the organization was established. I mean, you just start getting just too many of these dots being too close together. It's the statistical issue of cluster. You know, you can't have too many dots in too close an area without there being some causality.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And so when you get to, well, gee, everyone is from this perspective, then when you can look at the leaders of it, the conceptual leaders like Bateson and Aldous Huxley, Tim Leary, and you start then connecting them directly into the CIA, then suddenly it becomes clear. And so now you have a template, you know, something that you can use to look at today with, and you go, well, what are they doing now?
Yeah.
Well, what is influencing you now? You know, is Miley Cyrus appearing somehow in the behavior of your children? You know, all of these psychotropic drugs, are they really good for you? Do you feel more sane today than you did before all of this stuff got in your body? You know, I personally just don't trust any of it. I think that, you know, we want to learn to think clearly, be healthy, and this is the basis from which we can continue to be free. So, you know, turn off the mainstream media. And you know, Henrik, again, don't want to just constantly be an applause machine for you, but you're just doing a great job here, brother.
Thank you.
Quality of your interviews is really good, and it creates something, a place where people can go that they know they can get clear-minded information. So to combat the influence of the mainstream media, the first thing we have to do is give alternatives so that people have some place to go, and you have done that, and you just are to be congratulated for it.
Well, thank you very much, Joseph. Really appreciate that. And of course, as I've said many times, we couldn't do it without you know, people like yourselves who are doing the research and the work, and of course helping us to bring a lot of these things together. And yeah, I mean, we touch upon so many different areas and so many different things. And some of it is for study. Some of it is for because we, you know, really agree with it. Some of it is to investigate and inquire. And, you know, it's an ongoing path, you know, to discovery and learning and truth. And it's a process. And that's what this is about, really. So we have a lot more work to do when it comes to all of this stuff. But yeah, Joseph, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate this. This has been a really good talk. There's a lot here to chew on, as it were, and a lot to think about, because this has been very interesting. And I hope we can do it again here soon. But why don't we give out some of the details again here, Joseph? The websites, give us the book titles and everything.
Well, else. You know, just go to caesarsmessiah.com or to Inside Out Asylum. And the new book is called Shakespeare's Secret Messiah, which also explains the Pauline character and the, you know, the Acts, and the Book of Revelation. And the reason I do it in this book is because I show how it connects into the Shakespearean literature. The documentary, the Caesar's Messiah documentary, is available, and that's a good way to avoid my prose. You can get a kind of the basic theory in a very easy and fun way to do it. The director of that, Fritz Heid, is just a masterful storyteller. I just want to thank you so much, Henrik, for having me on. Hope to be here again someday.
Oh, definitely. Thank you, Joseph. The books here again, Caesar's Messiah and the latest one, Shakespeare's Secret Messiah. Check that one out. A lot of good stuff in there. All right. Thank you so much, Joseph. We'll talk soon again.
Thank you.
That's Joseph Atwill. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening today. Always great to have you with us. More coming up in just a few days. We have John Rappaport, Felice Vinci, and William Mullen, David Matheson, Dave McGowan, to name a few. Stay tuned, of course, to the websites for the latest. My thanks to the Red Ice crew, Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. And as always, a special thanks to all our members, to you, for showing your support and for your continued interest in these important subjects. You make our continued investigations and presentations possible, so a big thanks to you. All right, please take care, my friends. We'll speak to you soon. Have a great rest of your day or evening. Take care.